Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
I heard a little factoid the other day that absolutely floored me about video games in China, and it's this. China has twice as many gamers as the U.S. has people, some 700 million of them.
When you go on the streets, when you are waiting at a bus stop, when you're in the supermarket, it's inevitable, especially if you see a kid with his hand folded out, he'll be playing a game, or she'll be playing a game.
That's Brenda Goh. She covers technology in China for Reuters.
It's pretty much in your face everywhere you go. I mean, it's the world's biggest video games market.
That ubiquity, especially among young people, has worried China's central government. So at the start of this month, they banned people who are under 18 from playing video games for more than 3 hours a week. They can only play from 8 to 9 p.m. on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday nights. And it's not just video games. The government has gone after tutoring companies and big tech players. Brenda calls this the season of crackdowns.
They've laid down new ground rules. They've cracked down on a whole bunch of sectors in a sense to bring them better in line with what they perceive as socialist values.
Yes, this is China, so some of this is to be expected. But Brenda says these moves are part of a bigger plan.
The authorities have been trying to strengthen their control over various parts of Chinese society and the Chinese economy.
Today on the show, how China's gaming curbs are just the opening salvo in a fight to reshape its youth culture and the internet. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and you're listening to What Next TBD, a show about technology, power, and how the future will be determined. Stick around.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank, USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
I want to understand kind of the role of video games in China. Like, before these restrictions started, who was playing? How often were they playing? Like, I guess I'm trying to understand, are these rich kids? Are they poor kids? Is it everybody?
It's everybody. We track back a bit about this whole concern over video games and young people in China. It goes back quite a few years. There used to be quite negative media coverage of these like internet addiction camps in China.
So it may look like fun and games, but parents will commit, force their kids to this facility for 4 to 6 months to break their internet addiction.
And around, I would say 2017, 2018, there were more complaints in society about video game addiction and also rising cases of short-sightedness. That's kind of when China started talking about curbing the video games industry.
What kind of games are we talking about? I know there's one called Honor of Kings that's really popular. Like, are these multiplayer games?
They're sort of, yeah, multiplayer battle royale type of games. I mean, Honor of Kings is essentially is very similar to League of Legends, which is very well known in the West. These are games where you essentially need to be online the whole time and you need to work with other players, strategize, fight with other clans, protect your territory. It's not a game that has a start and finish, but it goes on for as long as you play it.
As I listen to you, it makes me wonder about these increasing restrictions that the central government put on gaming over the years. Kind of as those restrictions tightened, How did teens react to them? And I guess, how do their parents react too?
This new rule, an hour a day on weekends and on Fridays, these time restrictions aren't new. There were already time restrictions that were put in place in 2019 that only allowed young kids to play less than an hour and a half on weekdays and, you know, 3 hours on weekends. The thing is that even though there were these restrictions in place, China's video game market is still the largest in the world.
The latest gaming curbs are getting a lot of news coverage, maybe in part because Western parents read about them and think they sound kind of appealing. But they fit into this broader attempt by China's central government to change the way teens live. One thing the government has targeted is online fan culture.
When they talk about fan culture in China, they're talking about this growth of an industry where you have these massive fan clubs that band behind celebrities in China. I mean, I guess it's not that dissimilar to fan cultures elsewhere. But what the government has been really getting unhappy about is that they say that it's causing a lot of internet disorder. So, for example, on social media, they say that they see fan clubs attacking each other on like China's version of Twitter. For example, some of these talent shows, in order to vote for the contestant you want to see win or to be able to be made part of the band, you actually had to like buy products in order to be able to cast the vote. So there was a big scandal a couple of months ago where fans of this show were filmed like wasting a lot of milk. They were buying milk that was from a sponsor of the show, but then throwing it down the drain. So it was kind of seen as, oh, this is very wasteful. So it's this sort of behaviors that the Chinese government took note of.
Is it possible to even know like how much time and money kids are spending kind of pumping up their favorite celebrities?
There's not really a lot of research done on this specifically, but you see interviews in local media with some of these kids that spend a lot of time supporting their favorite idol, and they will say, oh, I spend thousands of dollars a month buying paraphernalia, chasing the star around the country. It's not an industry that is to be taken lightly.
In August, China's internet regulator banned platforms from publishing lists that ranked celebrities, because kids were spending hours online trying to game the rankings and then fighting with other fan groups. The government also regulated merchandise sales. And those moves came after another crackdown on the $120 billion online tutoring industry, where kids were getting extra help in school, often from Americans and other Westerners.
That move took everybody by surprise. I mean, it was the ferocity of that move in a way. It's very expensive to bring up a child in China when you compare incomes to the costs when it comes to education or just providing life comforts for these kids. So when the government did this, it was seen very much as they want to reduce the amount of stress both parents and children are under.
It sounds both like it's about lowering stress, but also maybe kind of lowering some inequality between the families that can pay for this kind of tutoring and those who can't.
There has been some skepticism about whether these sort of, you know, especially the private tutoring policy, whether it could have an adverse negative effect. Because, for example, when it was first announced, after getting over their disbelief, a lot of parents started going out to look for private tutors. So whether some of this would go into sort of the gray market, that was one of the big questions that people had.
When we come back, the Chinese government isn't just trying to change teen culture. It's also trying to change the internet.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You're listening to What Next TBD. I'm Lizzie O'Leary, and I'm talking with Brenda Goh, who covers technology in China for Reuters.
The video game curbs came out last month, but China's technology sector has been under pressure since late last year. You could say that the starting gun for this seasonal regulatory crackdown was when they blocked the Ant Group IPO.
Ant was supposed to list on Thursday and not anymore. The Shanghai Stock Exchange said that it's going to be suspending the listing after the company...
That was going to be the world's biggest IPO, and that was blocked. And from then, you know, regulators in China signaled that we're going to be much tougher on technology companies. We saw numerous fines, we saw punishments, companies being called up for infringing consumer rights, building up monopolies in certain areas. So the video game curbs follows all of that.
When you look at the share prices of these companies, you know, recently they've fallen kind of dramatically. But it also feels a little bit like the central government is maybe trying to scale back some of their growth. And I wonder if you think at all there is a recognition that some of the, you know, runaway economic growth of the past 15 years in China had real downsides to it. Like, is this just about technology and video games, or is it about trying to find a more sustainable economic model?
I think what the Chinese government has been saying is that they recognize that there has been some excesses or some, you know, bad practices that have resulted of the growth of these technology companies. For example, they're really concerned about data because a lot of these technology companies, they know everything about you, right? Because we rely on Alibaba and Tencent's apps and, you know, other tech companies' apps to manage our everyday lives in China. So the government is worried about consumer rights. There's also concern about the treatment of gig workers in China. China relies a lot on, you know, delivery men that, you know, in China is very cheap. It's very quick to get something delivered. And over the years, that's been a great growth driver. But at the same time, there's been increasing recognition that a lot of these workers, they don't have the basic protections like insurance. They don't have adequate rest period sometimes.
You know, a lot of these regulatory curbs are frankly things that I think Western governments would like to impose on their tech companies as well.
I mean, yeah, that's the interesting parallels that you see. I mean, a lot of the discussions that we're having here is not things that, you know, in the US or in Europe, unheard of. For example, in the US, in Europe, there's a lot of chatter as well about regulating the gig economy companies, right? And China's been doing it here as well. So yeah, I mean, it's quite fascinating to look at the global regulatory picture right now and see how that's progressing in different parts of the world.
Is it possible to look at some of these changes and get a sense of what the central government or Xi Jinping in particular want for China in the next decade? Or is that oversimplifying?
What they've been saying a lot is how they want to bring culture, bring the economy, bring these companies back to socialist values. China already has pretty strict censorship policies where things that are on the internet that are seen to violate socialist values are censored pretty quickly. But what analysts, what China watchers have been observing with the last couple of months of crackdown is there's a lot more of an intentional effort to bring different parts of society, of culture, actively into place.
I wonder what a socialist internet looks like. Like, that's such a fascinating kind of way of thinking about it. What could that model actually end up being?
On Tuesday, they put out a document they said were guidelines for the development of what they call a civilized internet or civilized cyberspace. So what they outlined in that document was stronger control over content, bad influencers should be dealt with, model workers, model citizens in China should be further highlighted. You know, the internet should be used to better spread socialist values. There is a vision for what the internet should be like from Beijing.
Brenda Goh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Lizzie.
Brenda Goh covers technology for Reuters. And that is it for us today. TBD is produced by Ethan Brooks. We're edited by Tori Bosch and Allison Benedict. Alicia Montgomery is the executive producer for Slate Podcasts. And TBD is part of the larger What Next family. It's also part of Future Tense, a partnership of Slate, Arizona State University, and New America. And I want to recommend you go back and listen to Tuesday's episode of What Next. It's about how college professors have just had it with COVID, workloads, pay, everything. What Next? We'll be back next week. I'm Lizzie O'Leary. Thanks for listening.
Hello, it is your partner, Big Boy. Interested in giving back to your community while making new connections in your neighborhood? Introducing Neighbor to Neighbor, a California volunteers network that empowers you to take action, contribute to local needs, and be a part of something bigger than yourself. Visit c8neighbors.com to learn more about how you can get to know your neighbor and strengthen your community. Neighbor to Neighbor, it takes a neighborhood. Hello.
Hi. I'm Jeremy Stahl. I'm Slate's jurisprudence editor. Ordinarily, I edit our courts and legal coverage from the comfort of my home office in Los Angeles, but for the next month and a half, I will be locked in a lower Manhattan courtroom with the rest of the press, a jury of 12 New Yorkers, Justice Juan Merchan, prosecutors, Trump's defense team, and the former president himself as history unfolds. I've temporarily moved myself and my family from Los Angeles to New York to cover this case firsthand, like I have done in other cases, including the Paul Manafort case, the Roger Stone criminal trial, and Donald Trump's first impeachment. I'm hoping that my background knowledge of the many, many criminal travails of our former president can offer something to you, Slate's listener. Over the next several weeks, you'll be hearing from me on Amicus, Slate's legal podcast, and in articles on Slate.com, from the jury selection to the opening arguments to the witness testimony and cross-examination and the prosecution's case and the defense's case, and ultimately to a final verdict. We will be providing you wall-to-wall coverage throughout the entirety of the trial as it unfolds from the courtroom. There's no way I'd be able to do it without the support of Slate Plus. So if you're not already a subscriber, please join today by clicking Try Free at the top of the Amicus show page on Apple Podcasts, or visit slate.com/amicusplus to get access wherever you listen. Thank you so, so much.